Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Ragnarok. Tonight's cold open, we decided to go with an old joke we had written down called the NPR cold open. Unfortunately, we did not remember what the punchline of that joke was supposed to be originally, so we decided to just do this. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to Ragnarok, your home of the Nerdpocalypse.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another wonderful episode of our fantastic podcast, Ragnarok.
Good use of synonyms.
Thank you. I studied thesaurus, like Ed told me to in the other take.
All right.
I'm Eric.
I'm Ed.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Ryan.
And we're here tonight to discuss Netflix discoveries.
That's episode 22, Netflix Discoveries, or...
The Torturous Tale of Dr. Piranabot.
Which, speaking of Dr. Piranabot, Meyer's not here because Dr. Piranabot is operating on him.
Mm-hmm.
What is he getting done again?
Sexual reassignment.
I thought it was just genital replacement. I thought that they were just giving him a different kind of penis.
Oh, he went for the upgrade instead of the switcheroo?
I'm not sure. We'll have to ask him when he gets back.
What was he getting?
I think he was going from barbed to severely barbed.
Oh, because he texted me before and he said he got sunburned because he was outside. And it hurt even more because Dr. Piranabot has sliced his scrotum open and stapled it to the sides of his legs.
Well, you know, we'll just have to ask him when he gets back.
I don't know if I want to.
I'm sure he'll tell us about it anyway.
I hope that's enough Meyer's penis for you guys. I know our audience is a big fan, so.
Yes, our one listener.
We're thinking of starting a Facebook page for it.
I wasn't thinking that.
I'm not a fan.
I would not be liking that on Facebook, no matter how many shares I buy.
Like Meyer's penis to get a free tote.
I don't know if I want that.
Wait, what would this tote look like? Would it be a Ragnarok tote or a Meyer's penis tote?
Ragnarok on one side, Meyer's penis on the other.
Maybe it's reversible. Like Meyer's new penis.
Right, exactly.
Meyer's penis inside, Ragnarok outside.
All right, enough Meyer's penis. Yes, this is far
Meyer's not even here. We're going on about his penis more than he ever would.
So let's talk about these Netflix discoveries, guys.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, well, what we did was we picked our top 10 of shows that we all discovered through Netflix. Now, these won't necessarily be Netflix discoveries for everyone, but these are shows that we found on Netflix that we wanted to share with you.
Mm-hmm. And they're also not in a particular top 10 order. This is just 10 shows that we like in random order.
Yeah, right. We had a hard enough time agreeing on 10 shows. We didn't want to have to then go ahead and put them in kind of order.
But you listeners will know which one the winner is.
Absolutely. Well, let's get this started.
It's our first show, Eric.
Our first show is Twin Peaks.
Oh, Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks is amazing.
It is fantastic.
Classic David Lynch weirdness. The creepy atmosphere and the quirky characters make this show a must-see for all would-be TV geeks.
Or regular TV geeks.
Right. But, I mean, just you talk about the quirky characters, you look at the main character, Coop, played by Kyle MacLachlan. He starts out talking about pie and trees. He has this preoccupation with minutiae. And he's there to solve the murder of a teenage girl. We should probably give a little background about the show for those who don't know it.
Well, it takes place in the small Washington state town of Twin Peaks.
Right.
Is it Washington? It's northwestern. Yes.
The Pacific Northwest.
Yes, Pacific Northwest. So lots of trees and mountains and everything.
And Laura Palmer is the lady murdered.
Yes,
the young lady.
It starts
prom queen.
Yes, her body is found. And the thrust of the show is really trying to figure out who killed Laura Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, Coop, who's the main character, he's an FBI agent who is sent to investigate the murder, has this weird preoccupation with minutiae and has these supernatural methods. There's this one scene where he's throwing rocks at glass bottles or something like that.
And he says a name before he throws each rock.
In order to sort of whittle down the list of suspects.
And he also relies pretty heavily on his dreams.
Yes, he does.
Information. His creepy, fucked up, horrifying dreams.
Yes, they are they're pretty terrifying and beautiful and just bizarre and strange. Like the Red Room. I mean, the Red Room.
Is that the one with the little guy dancing?
Yeah, with the weird midget.
That guy was cool.
And he's got this... There's a great gimmick that they do on the show. He talks to Diane, who I imagine is his assistant or his secretary or something. He's talking into a dictaphone.
It's just a tape recorder.
Yeah, well. And he's just sort of narrating what he's like, so, Diane, today I found blah, 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 and I found a great place to eat pie. And, like, you never meet Diane. There's no... He never really explains who Diane is.
I assume he sends her the tapes, because he usually, right. like, asks her for things. Like,
yeah.
send me 5 books or something.
But they never show him sending... It's just a very interesting mechanic, because it lets him narrate, and it sort of lets him do some exposition without doing exposition.
Yeah.
And it also highlights his weirdness.
Yeah.
Which is a lot.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's Leland, played by Ray Wise...
who you'll recognize as that guy from everything.
Yes. He was in RoboCop.
He was in RoboCop.
He's part of everything.
Yeah.
So.
But without giving too much away, his psychotic break, it's heart-wrenching and disturbing, but also in a lot of ways really funny.
Yeah. The whole show, well, you know, and then the other characters too, like, you know, there's the log lady.
Why do you call her log lady?
Because she always walks around carrying a log.
It's a good reason.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the line is, who's that lady over there with the log? They call her the log lady. And then Dr. Jacoby, who's that weird...
psychologist.
He's Laura Palmer's psychologist. And then Nadine, the one-eyed, super-strong, redhead wife of Ed, who is obsessed with drapes.
You realize you called Dr. Jacoby that weird psychiatrist. That could precede any character on the show.
Not psychiatrist.
What?
Not psychiatrist. He's the only...
No, that weird.
Oh, yes, yes.
I really like this show because I feel like it's kind of the perfect blend of melodrama and satire. They meant for it to be like a takeoff of a soap opera. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but not in a way that really prevents the audience from taking the show seriously.
Right, and I think one of the reasons for that is, you know, like we said, all the characters are really weird. But it's all rooted in this investigation of the murder of Laura Palmer, which sort of keeps everything grounded and chilled in a way. Because, you know, it sort of gets off onto this weirdness, but then it always comes back around to this murdered girl. And, like, once you find out what happened to her, it's just even worse.
I think one of the things that made the first season so successful, not so much the second season, was that it was like a soap opera, but with a satirical and absurd Lynch twist. You have the business mogul and his shady ne'er-do-well brother, which is the soap opera cliche. And then you have them orgasming over particularly delicious sandwiches, which is the Lynch twist.
Yeah. And it's really weird. It's a very subtle transition. Because for some reason, I think it was the studio made Lynch reveal who killed Laura Palmer about a third of the way through season 2.
And he didn't want to. That's why he stopped working on the show.
Right.
Him and Mark Frost.
Yeah. So there's a very definitive break. Once you find out who killed her... The next episode after that is really good, but then it goes off. And it's really odd because it stays on that soap opera dramatic, you know, over-the-top thing, but there's a very subtle shift, and it goes from being a satire of everything that's happening to just being that.
Right, because you lose that frightening, terrifying imagery Ryan was talking about.
And you know what? That terrifying imagery, he is just a master of that.
Oh,
that is
God.
David Lynch at the top of his game.
I don't want to say what happens in that last episode, but it still gives me chills when I think about it.
I mean, you could say screaming Laura Palmer. That's not going to give anything away.
Well, you know, Laura Palmer's in the last episode, and she was dead in the first episode.
Thanks, Ed.
Right, but you know that she's throughout the whole show.
I know.
She shows
but
up.
If you haven't seen it, you wouldn't know that.
Well, okay, I just ruined it for everybody.
Yep.
But,
yeah.
Don't you feel like a dick.
Thanks for ruining it for everyone, Ed.
Just another example. There's this one shot of Laura Palmer's mother walking down the stairs from the pilot episode that is just for some reason extremely strange to watch and really uncomfortable.
I think what you're talking about, Ryan, is that the way the shot is composed in that particular scene, in my opinion, it's one of those shots you'd have like in a horror movie where someone goes downstairs and then the killer slinks out of the shadows and quietly follows them.
Mm-hmm.
Like it uses tropes like that, but no one follows her. She's alone in the house, but it sets that up because you know as a viewer that shot means that, oh, something bad's going to happen.
It plays on that implication.
Yeah. But speaking of implication, our next show that we're going to be talking about is a personal favorite of mine, Sherlock.
Oh, Sherlock.
No shit. I hear so many people talking about this show, and this is one I really have been meaning to watch.
Yeah.
It's just like all over when I go on Tumblr and such. It's like all over that place.
You need to watch it. It's a quick run too. It's 3 90-minute episodes are on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I think series 2 is up somewhere else online. Yeah. I haven't gotten a chance to watch that.
Series 2 is off.
Series 3 is coming out soon.
Oh man. It's going to be good.
But I love this show because it's not just another modern reimagining of a classic story. I feel like Stephen Moffat really put his own unique spin on the characters and their interactions with each other.
It was definitely a great way to modernize it. Hmm. Like, I think my favorite twist is, you know, in the original stories, the premise was that Watson was writing it and selling them, and he was telling everyone about, you know, the tales of Sherlock Holmes. And in this one, Watson blogs it as part of, like, his post-war therapy. He blogs about living with Sherlock Holmes and all the things they do, and it starts to gain popularity. Which might seem, you know, just kind of, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense. People don't write anymore. They blog. But it's actually kind of a clever way to bring it forward and still keep that original idea.
Well, the whole show, they basically they talk about a technology gimmick. I mean, there's the text message method of conveying information, where instead of him saying, "Oh, blimey, I was just texted by Irene Adler, I need to meet her at the train station,"
they actually just show the text on the screen, which is really good.
The TV screen.
Yeah. I felt like the plot lines were all really good, especially the third episode of Series 1. With the first episode where they introduce Holmes's nemesis Moriarty, he has this thing that he uses called stolen voices, and I'm not going to say anything more about that because that would be a huge spoiler. But goddamn, is it a chillingly effective story mechanic?
Yeah, and I think one of the favorite things, my favorite things about the show is also that the main character Holmes sort of has this unrelatable quality to him. You know, like he's not quite human. When I watch Benedict Cumberbatch playing him...
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes. Like, he kind of plays it like Matt Smith's Doctor Who, but not quite. It's different. But he sort of has that, you know, he's a like, man who's so smart that other things, like social niceties, just escape him or are beneath him.
He's like the doctor with Asperger's.
Yeah, kind of. Like, he's the doctor if he were a dick.
Right, well... I think it's a little strong to call everybody with Asperger's a dick.
Well, no, I wasn't doing that.
But I think that what I'm trying to say is that he's not a dick on purpose. He's socially inept.
Yes.
And that's sort of the...
And I think one of the things he said on the show was that he just, you know, deleted that from his brain because he didn't need it.
Right.
And he replaced it with more important information. Yeah, but it's his the way they do it is fantastic. Like you were mentioning earlier, Ed, you know, like the allusions to the original stories.
Right, but for the tech, with his brain, you're talking about deleting from his brain. He does. That's another technology thing. Like that scene where he's literally rearranging the information in his head with his hands.
Yeah,
and he's like pushing some information. Like it almost looks like he's controlling an iPod, like a touchscreen, except it's his brain.
Yeah, there are fantastic allusions to the original series. Like, instead of Hound of the Baskervilles, in the second series, they have the episode The Hounds of Baskerville, where they're investigating, you know, reports of giant hounds at this chemical research station, Baskerville.
Hmm. The study in Scarlet becomes a study in pink. The scandal in Bohemia becomes a scandal in Belgravia.
Yeah.
Belgravia, I don't know how to pronounce.
That's about right.
That place.
Yeah.
The Bee Land.
That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Bee Land, which is short for Britain.
We have another British offering up next. Another very, very strange kind of show.
Oh, yeah.
The League of Gentlemen.
I don't know what's so weird about it, guys. What do you mean?
Which, unfortunately, it's not on, right? It's not on Netflix,
it's not on Netflix anymore, which makes me sad.
Yeah. The conceit of this show is basically that most of the characters, it's set in this northern English town of Royston Vasey, and
it's a local town.
Yes, it's a local town for local people, and most of the characters in the town. I shouldn't say all of them because there are a few who aren't. Most of them are portrayed by the same three actors who change costumes and makeup.
That would be Steve Pemberton, Mark Gatiss, and Reese Shearsmith.
I feel like they did a great job of creating memorable characters, especially Edward and Tubbs, who own the local shop, are my two favorites.
They are fantastic.
They have really good stories about how they came up with a lot of these characters, too. Tubbs and Edward, they came up with because they were in a shop, and the proprietress at the shop was eyeing them suspiciously because they were not local. And they sort of turned it into this, you know, and then in their show, the proprietress and the proprietor of the shop, Edward and Tubbs, were killing people who weren't local, and it's absurd. They take it to the nth degree.
And they were inbred pig people.
Yes, they were inbred pig people. And then there's Pauline, who is based on an actual, what do they call it in England? It's unemployment here. I forget what on the dole.
On the dole.
And it's basically, you have to go to these classes, these how to find work classes, and they had this real teacher named Pauline, who was this despicable bitch. And Steve Pemberton plays this character, her name is Pauline, and he plays her really as a real woman in their reality, rather than just playing her as a silly drag romp purely there for laughs. Mm. And what I mean by their reality is that it's absurd and dark, but it still focuses on the reality of the characters within that context. Because basically, their reality is nothing like ours, but everything that happens there happens within the context of that reality, if that makes any sense.
They're creating a consistent milieu for the show.
Exactly, exactly.
Like people don't necessarily react to things like they would in reality.
Right.
But they do it consistently throughout the show.
Yes. And then there are characters who you don't really know why they're funny, like Charlie and Stella, who are this tragic couple with a dead daughter and a dead marriage, and the husband's secretly gay, and all they do is
argue,
yeah. And it's depressing, but also really funny.
And then there's my favorite, Papa Lazaro. He's one of the most like strange, oddly memorable characters I've seen on TV. I don't know. It's just he grabs you as just this horribly bizarre character.
He scares me more than any other character I've seen on TV, including screaming Laura Palmer.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Because Papa Lazaro is scary.
My Dave.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Papa Lazaro he's dressed kind of like a ringmaster or a circus barker.
Slash minstrel.
Yes, but he's in blackface. And he has this creepy, long, brown, curly hair and just this crusty look about him
And he's
like a cross between Slash and Baron Samedi.
Yeah, it's true.
And
he's also sort of a real character. He's based off of the guys who wrote the show. He's based off of a landlord that they had named Peter Papalazaro.
That's horrible.
But I think the only real bit of him that made it into the show was his Greek accent and a couple of lines of dialogue.
Yeah, because he would always call up asking for Steve. He never wanted to talk to either Mark or Reese. So they changed that into him always calling everyone Dave.
Hello, Dave. It's Dave there.
Oh, God. Speaking of the odd comedy of Royston Vasey, I really love League of Gentlemen because it's funny, but it isn't afraid to take a serious emotional turn every now and again.
Yeah, and every now and again also means the entirety of season 3 for no discernible reason.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I still think it has some funny bits.
It does, but the third season definitely takes a much more serious turn. Completely out of the blue.
It does. It follows the life of a pink pink plastic shopping bag.
Yeah, it's also, you know, the show itself is really surprisingly dark at times. Like in the end of the Christmas special.
And we're back to Papa Lazaro.
Yeah. Oh.
What an ending that was. If you don't even watch the show, I know for a fact this is on YouTube. Type in Papa Lazaro Christmas and just watch that scene. And tell me that it's not going to give you nightmares. That is probably one of the scariest things I've seen on television.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing when they were writing it, they didn't even realize it was scary.
Yeah, no, they had no idea. And when people would talk to them about how scary it was, all right, let's go back. They watched it. They went back and watched it and realized that it was absolutely terrifying. Oh my God. Just please, listeners, go and Papa Lazaro Christmas, just watch that one scene.
We could just put it on the show notes.
Or we could put it on the show notes.
Yeah, I'll find a YouTube link.
But you know what? Even though it's terrifying and sometimes it's really dark, it's really funny, I swear. I know that it doesn't sound funny from what we're describing.
But it really is hilarious.
We promise.
Yeah, it is.
We're just busy saying this show that made us have nightmares is really a laugh riot.
These tragic characters and, you know, this terrifying... But it's actually very funny. It's really...
Most of the time.
All right, so I think it's about time to move on to our next show. That will be Jekyll.
Yes, it would.
Jekyll, another great Stephen Moffat show.
Yep.
I think this really shows off his talent for characterization and adding fresh twists to stories that people, you know, pretty much already know by heart.
Right, like Sherlock, another, you know, right, modern retelling of a classic tale.
One of my favorite parts of the show is James Nesbitt's performance as the lead character, Dr. Jekyll.
Lead characters.
Yeah, that's true, because Mr. Hyde is pretty much a character in his own right.
Although his name isn't Jekyll on the show.
It's Jackman.
That's right.
And Hyde also, I believe, he's definitely a different character, because he's physically different. Like, Jackman goes through a physical change.
That's right, because they use different makeup. Mm-hmm.
He has the sharper teeth, he has darker eyes.
They gave him, like, a heavier brow, yeah, I think, too.
He's supposedly better looking, and... I think he's chunky, a little chubbier as Jackman.
Yeah. But I love this show. I think it really showcases the potential of the miniseries that American television is more often than not unwilling to realize.
Yeah.
Because in Britain, you know, they'll say, okay, well, we're going to make this show, and it's going to be a 6-episode run, and then that's it. And they can do whatever they want within that framework. But I feel like that doesn't really happen very often in American television, unless it's intended to lead towards something else, like if it's a backdoor pilot for something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there have been a few instances I've seen on Netflix, you know, good miniseries that were like 12 episodes and it ended, but they're few and far between. I wish there were more of them. But, you know, for me, I think one of the things I love most about Jekyll was that it was a really engrossing story, and it took that original tale of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and sort of warped it and made Jekyll into even more of a victim. And Hyde into even more of a monster than, you know, in the original story. And then you throw all of that aside and change things even more in, like, the last 2 or 3 episodes. It's really good.
You know, I'm just realizing now that Mark Gatiss has been part of 3 of our things. Mark Gatiss, League of Gentlemen, Mark Gatiss, Jekyll, Mark Gatiss, Sherlock Holmes.
Yep. Yes, he was Mycroft in Sherlock. Yeah.
And a writer. And he's also a writer on Doctor Who, which we didn't mention in here.
No. But yeah, so apparently we like Mark Gatiss.
Yeah.
That's good work.
So kudos to you, Mark Gatiss.
You know, Mark Gatiss was not in Red Dwarf, though.
No which is our next
author. So let's cut it. Let's find out who Mark Gatiss is.
Fuck Red Dwarf.
No. We can't forget about Red Dwarf. It's amazing. It's sci-fi comedy at its best. It's Lost in Space meets The Odd Couple with a dash of Monty Python's Flying Circus thrown in.
Basically, it's like you said, The Odd Couple. It's Lister the Slob and Rimmer the Jerk.
Classic, you know, it's sitcom setup.
It's the tale of the last surviving human, Dave Lister, and his hologram. I don't know if you could even call him his friend. It's his roommate, and you know they are the odd couple of the future.
It's a sitcom setup, you know, that isn't really afraid to use its gimmicks well, you know, without relying on them entirely as a crutch for all of the laughs.
Right. Like, you can have an episode where, you know, you get laughs from clever jokes, but then, you know, Crichton will twist his nipples to turn the radio on. And that's a bit of a gimmick, but it's still funny, you know.
A bit of a gimmick?
Yeah. But they don't, like... It's not just a half hour of Crichton playing with his nipples. You know?
Damn it.
Well, why are we even telling people to watch the show then?
So, guys, if there's not an episode with a half hour of Crichton twisting his nipples to turn on the radio, I don't think there's any reason we should be telling people to watch Red Dwarf.
Well, and then you also get hilarious things that come completely out of left field. Like, we mentioned that the character Rimmer is a hologram. There's this one episode where he gets infected by a computer virus and goes crazy. And he dresses up in a checkered gingham gown. He puts on a wig with pigtails, and he has this penguin puppet that he talks to, and he calls Mr. Flibble.
Mr. Flibble, right.
and he spends the rest of the episode, you know, talking to Mr. Flibble in this really creepy voice and trying to kill everyone on the ship with his laser vision.
I haven't seen the show, unfortunately. I mean, I'm going to have to check it out.
Basically, one of the things that's great about the show is the concept, which is, you know, if you take a lot of these Omega Man-esque sci-fi series, they aim really high and they present this incredible character having incredible adventures and facing off against insurmountable odds, but still managing to be incredible. It's all very big. Red Dwarf is the story of a Smeghead who got lucky and remained supremely unchanged by the apocalypse, for the most part.
One of the things that I love is Rimmer's character, Ace Rimmer, who is an alternate version of Rimmer, who is a hero. And Rimmer's character traditionally is very selfish and terrified of any kind of danger, but he always presents himself as sort of a by-the-book adventurous type. But when things really, you know, when things get heavy, you know, Rimmer hides behind something.
Smoke me a kipper. I'll be back by breakfast.
Mm-hmm. And then they bring in this alternate Rimmer who's just the total opposite of him in
what
every
a guy.
Way. Everybody loves him, and it's hilarious.
I mean, basically, they got away with things like that because the writers of Red Dwarf did what they wanted, and that's Rob Grant and Doug Naylor. They did what they wanted when they wanted it and didn't really worry about explaining it effectively, at least. All that matters was that it was entertaining and was vaguely explained in sci-fi terms.
Mm-hmm. They weren't really all that worried about continuity.
Right.
Like,
no,
I think there was one episode. It was pretty much just a throwaway episode where it was all about Lister's past,
mm-hmm.
and apparently he was his own father, if I'm remembering
yes.
correctly, and he left himself as a baby under a pool table in a
yes.
bar.
Yes, yes, yes.
With in a box that said Ouroboros on the side.
Yes,
of it.
And like Kachansky was two different people, and they didn't worry about continuity.
And for some reason, she just vanished.
Yeah. And they didn't, but that didn't matter. And then they even, what was it, between season 2 and season 3, they just sort of did that.
Yeah, when Holly, the computer program,
yeah.
became a woman.
And they just completely revamped the show, and then they did a speed through, a speeding scroll that
explained everything that happened
between seasons 2 and 3.
That you can't possibly
right.
read.
Why don't we let our listeners view the show and find out about it instead of you guys narrating
all
the
right.
entire thing?
It's really good. Go
these
go check
are all the
out.
Events of the show we're telling you to watch. Now you don't gotta.
All right, well, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back and talk about some American television, actually, because they do some things right.
Occasionally.
Sometimes.
We at Ragged Rock would like to announce a special change in our update schedule. Instead of updating our podcast bi-weekly, we'll now be putting up a file every week. Every fourth week will be a podcast episode, and every other week will be one of our Ragged Rock actual plays. So for those of you who look forward to those, there'll be more to look forward to in the future. We now return you to our program already in progress. Has Ed taken his antipsychotics?
I don't know.
What? Okay.
I'm going to say no.
Well, that's how I felt about the second season.
And we are back from break, and just in time to go into our next show.
I'm not finished with my break yet.
All right,
I'm done.
All right, now all of us are back from break, and now it's time to go into our next show. Which is Jericho.
Oh, man. The first season of Jericho is some of the most gripping TV I've ever seen. The drama just builds steadily throughout to a climax that has to be seen to be believed, pretty much.
And I know the first season was better, but I still thought the second season was really great. But in a completely different way.
It went from a show, Ed apparently disagrees, it went from a show about people surviving what they thought was a nuclear apocalypse to this political intrigue slash espionage show. It was still really well done, although a jarring twist to the story, but it still allowed them to further develop the characters.
And speaking of the characters, they're all amazing, relatable, realistic, and very compelling.
Yeah, on this topic, I guess I like shows where I'm afraid of characters because I'm also terrified of Robert Hawkins.
He's a scary man.
This character played by, I can't remember his name, but it doesn't really matter.
I hope he's not listening.
Ed, you just pissed off Robert Hawkins. He's coming for you. Remember my name.
Ed didn't remember my name. Robert Hawkins was a great setup. This guy was this mysterious stranger. Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? What are his intentions? You don't know.
Was he a pool guy?
Wasn't he a pool guy?
Was
Jake a pool guy?
He was consistently sympathetic throughout this whole mysterious phase due to his love of his family, which was nice. And then at the end, there is a pretty amazing payoff. But he's a badass throughout the whole thing, so that's cool.
Yep.
And before we move on to our next show, I'd just like to add, fuck New Bern and their stupid goddamn windmills.
Nuts.
New Bern blows.
Yeah, we should break those bad windmills, which transitions pretty well into our next show.
Mad Men.
Exactly.
Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad is one of those shows that asks the question, how much worse could things possibly get? And then shows you the answer in devastating detail.
The answer, of course, is much.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Very, very much worse.
And every time you think it's not going to get any worse,
it gets much worse.
Sort of like sex with Eric.
I don't know. We don't know about that yet.
Ryan, please continue.
Yes. Getting away from that. Breaking Bad has action, drama...
Getting away from that, Meyer's penis.
Is that better or worse?
I don't know.
I don't know. We'll see when he gets back from his surgery.
Dr. Piranapot does some horrible things, I've heard.
Speaking of action, drama, and black comedy done right.
Yeah, the showrunner on Breaking Bad, Vince Gilligan, he really knows his shit.
Basically, this show is like if Lucy and Ethel decided to cook and sell meth.
Yeah. I mean, I had heard good things about the show, but I never bothered to check it out before it was on Netflix. And within an episode, it just became one of my most favorite shows ever. It's superbly done, and everything is... humorous. Like, the main character getting a hand job in the first episode.
Yeah.
Was so funny and awkward. And every story arc keeps upping the ante, but in a realistic way.
And I guess we're character people here at Ragnarok, because for me, it's the characters that make the show. I feel like it's a character-driven story.
Definitely.
Even more than the fuck-ups and the how worse can it be, how much worse can it get. Because all the characters, none of them are innocent, but they're all awesome and lovable. Except for Gus, who scares me almost as much as Papa Lazarus does.
Gus is a scary man, especially in season 4.
From the very beginning, whatever's going to happen in this show, it can't possibly end well.
No.
For these characters
anyone,
who love.
For anyone.
It's about them making and selling meth. There's no good ending to that.
All right, well, I know we had ended the last segment by saying we were going to move back into America, but we're just going to take another trip to Britain for a second.
We haven't talked enough about English shows.
We're just going to hop over the pond for a moment.
We have to talk about...
Hey, we're going to hop over to the pond and get some tea and shall I watch the telly.
Not going to hop over to the pond. We're not going to go to the beach.
What, you didn't like my English accent?
No, I loved it. You were just said silly things.
Now that we've torn another transition down, let's talk about that Mitchell and Webb look.
Yeah. That's what we do, Eric. You build them up, we tear them down.
That show has some of the funniest British sketch comedy around. It's snarky, intelligent, and unafraid to break the formula.
Talk about breaking the formula. You just got to look at the Series 4 final sketch, which really wasn't not even a sketch at all. It started out as a really wacky sketch about Sherlock Holmes having Alzheimer's, and then sort of turned into this really depressed, actually legitimately dramatic, touching, heart-wrenching scene about
Sherlock Holmes having
Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like a modern day Monty Python. It's the same guys doing everything. Sort of like we were talking about earlier, League of Gentlemen, but this is more Monty Python-esque in the sense that it's all unconnected. It's just skit, 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 skit.
League of Gentlemen was a basically a week-to-week story. Just
right. There's overarching plot to everything. This one, it's just skit, skit, skit.
Exactly. And they have some repeating sketches, like their game show sketch Number Wang, which is a great sketch. But they also know when to stop a joke, because like they don't. Most sketch shows will take a joke and kill it. They will do it week after week after week after week until it's not funny. You know, right. You look at Little Britain, they do that. You look at SNL and they do that. They tell a joke, it's funny, and then they move on. So I don't really know how they keep creating original hilarious material, but they do.
It's witchcraft.
Oh, okay.
I guess they must use witchcraft in a lot of shows I like, because this one, it pretty much embodies my favorite kind of humor. It's just bizarre, off the wall, almost completely random nonsense. Like the whole cheeseoid sketch was one of my favorite things I've ever seen.
Definitely.
But nobody does self-referential sketches like they do. Like the one where they have the dolls made of them, or when they read their bad reviews that they've gotten on right. there.
Yeah.
And bad reviews, that's something that Last Airbender movie got, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
But you know what wasn't bad?
Pizza?
Pizza? Yeah, pizza wasn't bad at all.
Porcupines?
Porcupines are kind of okay.
The Industrial Revolution?
That was very good for our society.
The Enlightenment.
Yeah, that was...
Yeah,
that's the Renaissance.
Oh, the Renaissance was great.
The bubonic plague.
Not so much.
Meyer's penis.
Depends on which third of Europe you were rooting for.
That's true.
And another thing that wasn't bad was Avatar: The Last Airbender.
The show,
not the movie.
The show's creators, Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzko, they create a rich story with likable characters, humor, and a robust world that will draw you in with its charm. I think they really showed their devotion to detail behind creating this world. They drew, you know, very heavily on Eastern culture to just create this incredibly detailed environment that these characters inhabit, and it feels like a real yeah. world.
Yeah, I mean, it was on Nickelodeon. It manages to stay within the confines of a quote unquote kids show, but it still tells a dramatic, engrossing story. It's really sort of a coming of age story to the backdrop of this horrible war that's been going on for a century, which is really kind of deep. And they still manage to do that effectively without, you know, making it inappropriate for kids.
Guys, you're all full of it. One word why the show is good. Mako.
Yeah.
Yeah, Uncle Iroh is definitely my favorite character.
So can we just move on to the next Mako?
Mako. Mm-hmm.
I'm good
all
with
right.
that.
All right. I guess that ends this discussion. So we're going to move on to our last show, 30 Rock.
Which Mako was not on.
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think he was he wasn't dead when the show premiered. He's dead now.
Yeah. I think they actually had to replace him with another VA in the last season of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Not the full season, but parts of it.
Because he had died.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, he didn't talk through a lot of the season.
Yeah, he was very, very quiet.
Let's wait until they forget what Mako sounds like.
Yeah.
but 30 Rock.
Yes, getting back to 30 Rock, just about every lesson I've ever learned about how to do long-form comedy well is manifest in this show. Tina Fey is the queen goddess of comedy writers.
Right. You know, it's sort of the textbook example of modern-day comedy done right, and yet nothing about it feels like a textbook show.
It's true.
Yeah, it seems to me like it's just hilarious joke after hilarious joke, almost nonstop, coming at you one after one after one, but it's still written and connected well enough that it doesn't come off as just jokes for the sake of jokes. It works. Despite this rapid fire, it just works.
I feel like one thing that they do really well is they make use of their performers, which is not only a credit to the actors and their talent, but also of good writing in general. Tracy Morgan, Scott Adsit, Alec Baldwin, Tina Fey, and Jane Krakowski are all magnificent.
But fuck Jack McBrayer, apparently.
I'd say he's second tier.
Okay.
Ooh.
Ooh. If Jack McBrayer is a listener, I'm sorry.
I like you.
And also, we apologize.
Thanks for listening. But
if the main cast is great, the guest bits I also have to mention. Dean Winters is Dennis Duffy, the Beeper King. Liz is Perpetual X. And Chris Parnell is Dr. Leo Spaceman.
Dr. Yep. Spaceman.
I am also particularly fond of Brian Williams' guest spots.
My favorite guest star ever, though. My favorite guest spot was Kelsey Grammer in the Best Friends Club.
Fantastic.
Really? It's absurdity, like Kelsey Grammer in the Best Friends Club. That's why I love this show, because it almost never takes itself seriously. And if it does, it quickly undercuts any sentiment or moral it had just created with a fart joke.
I have a boner!
There are too many farts in this fart machine! And Katrina Bowden is really hot. That's always
a is she the one with that's always wearing like the hats and has the long hair and the scraggly
that's
beard?
No, Judah Friedlander.
Oh, okay. she's a tubby guy that they're always kind of unsure about.
No, that's Lutz.
The bald guy?
Yeah.
Judah Friedlander that's is awkward. Pretty gorgeous.
He's a handsome gentleman.
Yep.
So that's it for our discussion on our top 10. I mean, obviously there's a lot of other good shows on there.
Nope, that's it.
Wow.
These are the only shows that I've liked. This is the only media I like, actually. I've never heard of books or movies.
If you've never heard of them, how could you heard of them to have said you've never heard of them?
What? Heard of what?
Books.
What?
Okay.
All right, so I guess we're done here.
Well, you know what we can do? We have that list of honorable mentions. I'll post them in the show notes. So if
that's a good idea.
If you're interested in seeing the list of shows that didn't make the list, check out
the list that didn't make the list.
These are the second string shows.
That's not necessarily true. These are all also great shows. We had to pick 10, so that's what we did.
No, call them what they are. They're second string shows. It's like being second string to Michael Jordan. That's still good. Like, that would be an honor.
Well, speaking of second string, stay tuned for another episode of Dead of Winter.
Yeah, that's like fourth string. Come on, we'll be back.
Episode 22 of Ragnarok. We are going to hear something we haven't heard in a little while. We're going to hear the next episode of Dead of Winter. So, Ed, why don't you bring us back? What's been going on?
Previously on Dead of Winter.
I've lived in Pine Springs my whole life.
If I had my way, Hollister, I'd put you in the electric chair myself, you murderer.
Let me see my lawyer.
If I'm to represent you at trial, I need your complete honesty. Did you do the murders?
I'm not a murderer. It started with Sarah's murder.
Do you really think it's wise for us to bring up a murder you're not even being accused of when you're being charged with two other murders?
But they're all connected. Ralph and I were taking the girls to the Lumberjack Motel after the prom.
Ralph McCann? The missing boy?
Man, the Lumberjack Motel is such a dump.
Yeah, but it's cheap. I'm gonna head in and get a room for Mr. Webb.
That guy is such a creeper. He's always staring at my ass.
Oh, it's you, Hollister. Good evening.
So tell me, how was prom night?
What a freak! He had a rockin' mustache, though.
That Reverend Winter's car?
Shit! Dude, you're so screwed.
Shut up! How the hell did he know we were gonna be here?
Really, that surprised? He's like creepy protective.
If you go out after prom, don't bother coming back!
Sarah?
What's going on in here?
Sheriff Barker. Eventually, I saw Sheriff Barker carrying Cass out. She looked like she was in a trance or something. And then they wheeled Sarah out on a stretcher. She was covered in hotel blankets.
I think I better talk to everyone who was there the night Sarah died.
Guys, what the hell was that?
I don't know. I'm scared.
Where are all those voices coming from?
I'm terrified.
I have audio magic.
It came from everywhere and nowhere.
All right, well, why don't we just cut to the episode?
Let's just listen.
I'm scared what will happen.
There's a strange inherent trust among air travelers. Watch my luggage while I use the restroom, please. People talk, I shared a sandwich with a young fellow from Brazil. The sandwich and my second glass of wine were free from a flight attendant I befriended. Folks on airplanes, I think, are all nervous and subconsciously coming to grips with mortality. You want a friend nearby if you're about to plummet to your death, yes? If you fly alone, and it's come to my attention most folks do, it seems only natural to bond with those around you, because an airplane is a small, airbound, and extremely brief society. Neighbors build relations, swap stories, and sometimes goods. Don't forget the sandwich. And then, when you land, the society of Flight 742 becomes extinct. There are times when the longevity of the society is extended. Diverted flights and delays, a unity of misery. That may be the strongest bond of humanity. Human suffering. Folks sleep unprotected near one another and have nothing better to do than to share and bond more. If the world was an airplane, everyone would get along a whole lot better, I think. But, of course, the world is not an airplane, and Pine Springs is no exception. Actually, that bit about human suffering being the strongest bond of humanity is true everywhere. There's a particular darkness in Pine Springs I wasn't aware of until I finally found Ralph McCann. Or should I say, when he found me.
These people are the enemy, whether you choose to believe it or not. And unless the government starts investing money into programs that will stop them, this country as we know it is doomed. Don't believe me? Just read the paper. It's not just a movement, it's a...
You better hope the government invests in someone to stop me from hitting you upside the head. Neil, why must you always watch that awful man?
Because, Virginia, I find his antics entertaining.
I think it's terrifying that people listen to a man like that.
Well, sure, he's terrifying. Doesn't make it any less entertaining, though. The man always looks like he's about to have an aneurysm or some such.
Honestly, Neil, you're awful sometimes.
Then it seems to me, Mrs. Price, that there is something wrong with you, as you voluntarily tied the knot with me.
True words were never spoken. I must be out of my mind because I still love you to pieces.
I never doubted it for a minute.
What in creation was that?
I don't know. Ginny, stay here. I'll go see what that noise was.
Neil, someone's coming up the stairs.
Yeah, I hear it. Ginny, go into the bathroom and lock the door.
But what about...
Damn it, Ginny, just do it. I'll take care of
it. What if he has a gun?
Get in the bathroom, Ginny.
Oh, heaven help us.
I wouldn't do that if I were you. Now, we have nothing of value here. I haven't seen your face yet, so you still have plenty of time to turn around and leave without getting into a whole mess of trouble for some old TV and some cheap jewelry.
I'm not here to rob you, Mr. Price.
Ralph McCann?
I heard you were looking for me.
You're damn right I was looking for you. Get into this room right now, boy, and tell me where in the world you've been hiding yourself.
Here and there. I didn't want to stay anywhere too long in case the cops were looking for me. The only reason I came back was because I heard Evan was in trouble.
For Pete's sake, Ralph, you could have come to my office, or at least come to the house during the day and ring the doorbell.
And risk being seen?
Running only makes you look guilty. If you just tell the police what happened...
What good would that do? Evan and I did nothing wrong, but no one believes it.
I do.
You do?
Uh-huh. Evan gave the police a full statement and, well, they might not buy it, but I do.
No offense, but that really doesn't make me feel better. One old hick isn't going to help me and Evan out of jail.
Excuse me, boy, but this old hick is the only person in the world who's busting his behind to make sure justice is served here. So I would appreciate it if you just showed me a little respect.
You're right. Sorry. I'm just kind of screwed up by this whole experience, you know.
Of course you are. If you weren't, I'd think there was something wrong with you.
Can I come out of the bathroom now?
Oh, yes, Ginny. Sorry, I forgot you were in there.
Forgot about me? A minute ago, you were all lovey-dovey, and now you forget about me.
Hello, Mrs. Price. Sorry to scare you like this.
Don't you hello me. Are you out of your mind, running from the police, breaking in the dead of night and scaring us into next week? Ralph McCann, you have some nerve.
But I...
Butts are for sitting on, young man. You should be ashamed of yourself. Leaving poor Evan to rot in jail like that. And you call yourself his friend. I have half a mind
Ginny,
to...
Ginny, please relax. Now, I'm sure Ralph knows he's acting like a fool without you yelling in his ears like that. Don't you, Ralph?
Yeah. Of course I do.
See? Now, Dumplin', why don't you go make a big old pitcher of lemonade for us while Ralph and I sort this out? Mrs. Price makes a damn fine pitcher of lemonade.
Fine. Not that he deserves any of my famous lemonade for acting the way he's been acting. But you're right, sweetie. I should let you guys talk shop so you can help poor Evan.
I married the best.
Yes, yes you did. Don't think I'm done yelling at you, though, Ralph. We're going to have a long talk later.
Yes, ma'am.
So, are you going to tell me what you came here to tell me, or do I have to use my ESP?
Damn, you've got spunk for someone who lived in this one-horse town his whole life.
Well, no one's ever accused me of being demure.
I'll bet not. Sure. I'll tell you who killed Sarah. And I bet he killed the other two also.
Who was it?
Arthur Webb, the guy who owns the Lumberjack Motel.
Arthur? What makes you say that? Do you have any proof?
He told me so. I'd say that counts as proof.
Ralph, you better tell me the story from the beginning.
The beginning? Guess that'd be a couple of months after Sarah got killed. Evan and I both suspected Mr. Webb, but we had nothing but our guts to go on. So we did some digging.
It's gotta be Webb, Ralph. No one else had a key to the hotel room except us and him.
Yeah, except Sheriff Barker thinks it's one of us. So it doesn't really matter that Webb had one too.
Why would either of us do it?
I don't know. I think he just hates us.
So we're screwed then, basically.
Unless we got something more than the key to go on, yeah.
Okay, so we follow him.
Who, Webb?
Yeah, we stake him out. Go through his shit. Find something that'll incriminate him.
Are we gonna start calling your car the mystery machine?
You're such an ass, Ralph. If we don't do this, you and I are gonna end up in jail. And I am not letting Webb get away with killing Sarah.
So what are you suggesting? We, like, stalk the dude till he slips up?
Exactly.
Alright. So let's go to the motel then, I guess.
Right on. Wait, we should split up. You stick to Webb like glue and find out what you can, while I go ask about him around town. Someone's gotta know something. How many secrets can there be in a small town like this?
I don't know if this is such a good idea, Evan. How am I supposed to keep an eye on him without him catching me?
Figure it out, Ralph. It's our only chance to get him back for killing Sarah and driving Cass crazy.
Okay, okay. Chill out, dude. I'll hide in the bushes or something.
I really hope you're kidding.
You got a better idea?
Just take the car. I'll hoof it.
Hoof it to where?
I'm gonna go talk to Mayor Prescott. He and Webb are friends, I think. He may know something that could point us in the right direction.
And I'll just drive to the Lumberjack Motel?
Yes, Ralph. Keep an eye on Webb. But don't let him see you.
Relax, bro. I got this.
God help us.
Oh, come on. Have a little faith.
Fine. I'm sure you'll do great, Ralph.
Thanks. What is it I'm supposed to do again?
Very funny. Just go, will you?
Alright, alright. Good luck, dude.
Let me see if I got this right. You two numbskulls decided to take it upon yourselves to investigate the crime by stalking Arthur Webb. Brilliant.
Don't scoff. We actually dug up some crazy stuff about him. Did you know about the secret club he was in?
I've heard rumors about some secret fraternity or something in town, but it's all pretty hush-hush. Supposedly, they don't tell you anything about it unless you're a member.
Exactly. Well, when we figured out that Mr. Webb was a member... We managed to get me an invitation to join as an initiate. We figured maybe he'd let his guard down there, get drunk, and let something slip. But we found something out that we definitely didn't expect. What's with the robes? And the guy's a creepy mess. Are they gonna, like, haze us before the gag party?
Shut up. The elder's about to speak.
Brothers, I hereby begin this season's meeting of the Brotherhood of Malevolence. Initiates, stand for the recital of the Oath of the Dread Fathers. Brother Alpha, as the second to the Elder, the duty falls to you to lead the
initiates in the oath. Are you prepared for this task?
Elder Aether, I cannot lead the initiates as you have requested. I find them to be an undesirable addition to this ancient brotherhood. I demand they all be immediately dismissed.
Brother Aether, you disrespect this brotherhood with your words. And you have failed to wear your shroud or disguise your voice, as is traditional for initiation ceremonies. The initiates have not earned the right to hear our true voices. Anonymity is our ally, brother.
Oh, give it a rest, Harry.
Do not use real names here, brother.
Why not? We all know each other here.
That is not quite accurate. You should not speak so freely, brother. It makes you sound foolish.
Oh, of course. My mistake. We all know each other here except for the Right Honorable Brother Mu. How could I forget your insistence on wearing your shrouds and using that ridiculous voice filter at every meeting?
Permanent anonymity is your brother's prerogative.
Why does he wish to remain anonymous? Hmm? Are we not a brotherhood of proud killers? Should we not take great pleasures in sharing our conquests in the Hall of Death?
Perhaps. But pride does not always mean you need to run your mouth off.
I think Brother Mu is ashamed that he only has 3 victims to claim as his own. He's undoubtedly jealous of 5 trophies I wear around my neck. These 5 dried ears that have earned me the title of second to the elder.
I must remind you, brother, that though your rise in the ranks of the Brotherhood has been both impressive and rapid, you are still my second until the time you claim your 6th victim.
Funny you should mention that, Elder.
Ha! Don't tell us you've claimed another one.
I have indeed, Brother Mo. And not just anyone. My latest victim is the very picture of purity, local girl, an icon in the community.
You claim to be responsible for the murder of Reverend Winter's daughter, Sarah?
I am responsible for the murder of Reverend Winter's daughter, Sarah. My trophy lies in my private room, drying as we speak.
So you don't have it yet?
I have sliced it right off her pretty little head myself, earrings and all. It just hasn't dried.
If what you say is true, Brother Alpha, then you have a claim to the seat of Elder. As such, if you wish to wash out this batch of initiates, it may very well be your right.
I object to this, Elder. Brother Alpha has not yet presented his 6th ear, and therefore has no claim to the seat of Elder yet. Only the Elder can wash out a batch of initiates.
Elder, Brother Mu speaks out of turn. As we know, he only has 3 ears. He's a full 2 degrees below me and shouldn't even be allowed to speak to me unless I address him first.
Brother Alpha is correct, Brother Mu. You are out of line. The decision whether to accept or reject the initiates is too important to be made when the eldership is in flux like this. Therefore, it shall be stayed until the next quarter's meeting, when Brother Alpha's impressive trophy should be ready for presentation.
And let it be known, my brothers, that I intend to do away with all this ceremony and anonymity foolishness and bring this fraternity into a new era where no one can hide their failures behind shrouds and voice filters. Isn't that right, Brother Mu?
Your mouth is going to get you into trouble, Webb.
Yes, I'm sure it will, brother. Elder, since we're holding off on the initiation, I think we brothers should celebrate my latest conquest, and I will share the story with you all.
Very well. The initiates will leave, and we will celebrate Brother Alpha's victory.
Hear, hear.
No, I can't leave now.
Brother Sigma, if you'd be so kind as to play the Brotherhood's favorite song.
Gotta hear this story.
Hey, what are you doing back there?
Sorry, I'm going.
And no more of this Brother Alpha business. It's my night. Call me Arthur. Brother Mu, what shall I call you?
I'm
I bet it's something embarrassing, like melding.
I had to leave. The creeps were all over the place, making sure there were no initiates in the room. So I didn't get to hear what he said after that. But he said he did it. He even talked about cutting her ear off. Wasn't that part left out of the papers? How else would he have known?
I don't rightly know. It certainly does raise some questions about Arthur. I always knew there was something wrong with that man. But I had no idea there was such darkness in our town.
So will what I told you keep Evan out of prison?
It might just do that. I will need you to testify on his behalf, of course.
No, I can't do that. I have to go back into hiding in case the police don't believe me. Or the Brotherhood finds me. I mean, there could be cops in a Brotherhood.
I realize that, Ralph. But without you here to corroborate the story, it's just hearsay. No one will listen.
You got to make them listen, because I'm not sticking around.
Ralph, I am not letting you leave this house. You need to stay in town and help Evan.
You won't let me leave? How do you plan on keeping me here?
Well, I can call the sheriff for a start. And don't let the snow on the roof fool you. I'll drop you on your head like a sack of potatoes before I let you leave this house.
I told you what you need to know. That's all I'm willing to do. I'm leaving.
I was hoping it wasn't going to come to this. But I've got to call the sheriff.
Or you could just let us leave.
Virginia!
Sorry, Puddin'. He got the drop on me while I was making the lemonade.
Get your gun away from my wife's head, or I promise I will tear that mustache right off your face and choke you to death with it.
I think you'd both end up dead before you took your first step. An eventuality I'd like to avoid. Your wife has very beautiful temples, and I'd hate to alter them.
I'm sorry, Mr. Price, but I can't go to prison, and I certainly can't let the Brotherhood find me.
Ralph McCann, you are a stupid, stupid boy, working with a man like that.
Maybe, but I'm still leaving.
If y'all wouldn't mind heading into the bathroom. Let's make this quick, folks. Ralph and I have places to be.
All right, you win. Just don't hurt my wife, and I'll do what you say.
Smart man. Ralph, why don't you push that dresser in front of the door with those big, strong arms of yours?
Think about what you're doing, Ralph. Think about who you've teamed yourself up with.
A man like that.
He's a better ally to have around than you think.
You're making me blush. Shall we away, Ralph?
Yeah. Let's get out of here. Sorry about this, Mr. Price.
I am too, Ralph. I'm sorry you made such a foolish decision. Ralph? Ralph? They left.
Neil, honey, you wouldn't judge me if I fainted right about now, would you?
Not at all, sweetheart. You go right ahead. I'll catch you. I promise.
Episode of Dead of Winter. I'm sure we're all looking forward to the next one.
I'm not.
Oh. I'm sure everyone but Alex is looking forward to the next one.
I'm not.
I'm sure Ryan and I are looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, I'd go so.
Alright.
Say that.
Alright, I'll do it just for you, Ryan.
Three out of four of us are now looking forward to the next one.
You wouldn't be the first person to say that.
And that about ends our episode of Ragnarok tonight. That was episode 22, Netflix Discoveries, or The Torturous Tale of Dr. Piranabot.
He does have a very torturous life.
He's nothing like Dr. Robotnik.
No. It's a good thing no one would ever confuse the two.
It's true.
Speaking of this torturous tale, I just got this text message from Meyer.
Oh?
It's a picture.
Oh, God,
you
no.
can keep that to yourself. Why don't you wrap this up, Eric, and tell him about Netflix and it.
You know what? I have to see it.
No.
All right.
No.
Yeah,
Eric, before he shows it to me, iTunes.
All right. We're on iTunes. Thing. You can download us on iTunes.
Okay. Let me see.
Before he shows it to me, quick. We're on Facebook. Facebook. Twitter also. You can get us on Twitter. You can go to our website, ragnarok.com.
And check this out.
Oh God!
There's so many more.
Not even looking. You could email us at info@ragnarok.com. You could call our phone number and leave a voicemail. What was that number again?
Ryan? You know what? Just because you don't know it, I'm going to show you the picture too.
No, please! Oh, God.
Oh, not on me.
That number is 516-362-6373 or 516-362-NERD. Oh, God, I looked at the picture.
Oh, God, I think...
They're not supposed to do that.
We just gotta cut it out here, guys.
Yeah, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And
we'll give you free
comments. Comments on our website, and if you don't do any of those things, we'll send you the picture.
Oh, you don't want to see this picture. It looks like it has a smile.
Oh, God, it's winking at me.
All right. I'm Eric.
I'm Ed.
I'm Alex.
And I'm disgusted.
Goodbye.
Oh, where's that bucket?
Вагоны едут и дымом подрост, и в пятках домов их трутся. И вынесут хвост на Бруклинский мост и спрячут в норы под Гудзон. Тебя слепила, ты оставил, но как барабанная дробь. Из тьмы по темени кофе Максвелл, Гуччо Дилас Роб. Скрежещет механика шум и гам, а люди замедляют жевать. Чуть гам, что выбросит, make money.